Welcome to the God's Goodness Podcast, where our mission is to encourage and highlight God's goodness and modern-day miracles. We are your hosts, Josh and Shelley Hankins. Today we have with us a special guest. His name is Ben Hinton, and I met him through Ian Reith. And if you haven't listened to Ian's episodes, you would be blessed if you do. So go check them out. Choose whom you will serve was the first one. And we just encourage you to listen to all those. But Ben is here to share something very near and dear to his heart, and he is hoping to encourage you with his story and what the Holy Spirit laid on him. So we'll have him open us up with an opening prayer, and then we'll get into it.
Dear Lord, I pray that in the winter months that you give us your power of your presence to help us, to encourage us, to equip us, to move through the darkness and into the light. These winter months tend to isolate us. It is not a time for isolation and hibernation, but rather a time for faith to rise up. So I just pray to have faith rise up in me and have us to encourage others, to encourage ourselves, to love others as to love ourselves. So equip us and give us your presence, because there's power in your presence. There is lightness in the darkness for those that go through seasonal blues or just go through a hard time in the winter months or any other month in the, or season in their life. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you.
So where would you like to start, Ben?
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me. And so, I'm an author and a speaker, author of the book, Let Faith Grow, Running Through Adversity. And one of the things I've been thinking about recently, you know, as I introduce myself as an author and speaker, I'm really trying to be conscientious about, you know, how you state that. So I am a man of faith. I am a Christian first and a follower of Jesus. And I'm a runner. That's the title of my book, Running Through Adversity. But I want to make sure I always start with I am, right? Mm-hmm. I am a man. I am a follower of Christ. I am a man, a follower of Christ, a husband, a father who likes to run. So I think, you know, I really want to emphasize in being spirit led today that our identity is in Christ. And that way, you know, we have many titles, but let's live in our identity first. And let's let our titles be part of the lightness to us, right? So as a runner, that's part of my title. That's not who I am. And I want to emphasize that for people today in the episode, because my story as an author starts with the worst day of my life become the best day of my life. Speaking of darkness to lightness, in 2013, on January 9th, I sustained a traumatic brain injury, falling down a flight of stairs, home alone. I don't remember it. So, but 11 o'clock that day, I stopped texting my fiance, who's now wife, and others as well, around 11 o'clock. And then all communication stopped. My fiance, when she came home at 4:30, found me in the basement. And I was alive and actually sustained not just a brain injury, but multiple injuries, because at some point, right, there's a verse that talks about fall down 7, get up 8. Well, I fell down a flight of stairs and it wasn't just one fall. So I think the spirit within me, right, to get up, to fight, to move, maybe get help, whatever it was, I fell multiple times, but I made it. I made it to the couch and she found me and I was, you know, taken to the hospital. Spent 18 days there. Now, when I came home, this is where my story gets very interesting that I want to emphasize. In 2012, I had signed up for a half marathon because that was going to be something that I was going to achieve in 2013. And that was in the summer or so, maybe the fall of 2012. I signed up for a race. I committed to it. In 2013, I had a traumatic brain injury. Now, life's in the details, and the details is in God. Because if I did not sign up for the race in 2012, prior to the brain injury, I don't think I would have had an opportunity to overcome. Because I was not in the midst, you know, mental state of mind or spirit after the brain injury. It's not like I had an aha moment. Hey, I'm going to go run a half marathon. Right? Because I couldn't commit to anything. I was lost. I felt broken. But there's a difference between, right, feeling broken. You know, one of your guests, Ian, said something to me that is part of my transformation. He said, people aren't broken. People need healed. And that can bring so much peace. And he also said, I would rather take the long way than the wrong way in this life. So again, life's in the details, and the details is in God. Because I signed up for the half marathon in 2012, that preparation, right, was there for me in 2013 because I decided to run the half marathon. Now, I will say, I was told you can't run this half marathon, right? I was told you were lucky to survive. You were lucky to live, right? And so I signed up for this half marathon, and they, listening to the doctors, right, listening to others around me, my inner circle, the doctor's family, I wasn't going to run the half marathon. So I made a phone call. It was to the Pittsburgh half marathon, and I called, and I'm not sure her name, this woman had answered. And I said, you know what? I cannot participate in this race. I can't run in it. You know, my doctor, I didn't even say I had a brain injury, but I just said, hey, medically, you know, I don't think I can run this race. And then she said something that changed my life. And she said, okay, well, if you want to defer your bib, you have a couple options. Option number one, you can give your bib away. Or option number two, you can transfer it and you can sell it. And that was my moment of running my race. That was my moment that I thought, this is a defining moment. I have to run this race. I'm not going to give this race away. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't motivation, it was inspiration. And I ran the half marathon 8 weeks later. And I've been running on a mission through my faith ever since.
Wow.
Incredible. Incredible.
I wouldn't even run a marathon, not with an injury. Mm-hmm. Like, that it takes a special person to be committed to do that. And I read your audio. Well, I listened to the audiobook.
Yes, thank you.
And you just keep at it. And it's amazing that it was, you just keep going at it. And it's a special person.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I work as an EMT. And so I've come across many a person that's fallen downstairs.
Yeah.
I've never met anybody that has not had to go to the hospital at one point and has gone down any significant amount of stairs, let alone repeated attempts as they attempted to climb up the stairs and fell back down, which I'm sure there's a few of them. But the injuries it sustained, muscular, skeletal, internal injuries, of course, the TBI. I don't think people understand just how crippling a TBI can be, how life-altering a traumatic brain injury can be, in that you are sitting here speaking to us about running marathons is truly a miracle. You are clearly favored by God. You clearly have a reason to be. You clearly have a mission and a purpose on your heart.
Mm. Yes, I love EMTs and what they do and the medical field. There are so many people that are just, like you said, favorable for what they do in their work for others. In fact, my best friend, his name is Dr. Perumba, who wrote the foreword of my book. So my wife, at the time, fiance, when she found me, when she came home, the first call that she made was to Dr. Perumba. And when she called him, they were talking because she said, he's in here, he's alive, he's talking, he's in his underwear, which I don't know why. I was in my underwear, I was doing laundry or whatever. So, you know, he can talk, he's kind of coherent. I'm asking him what happened. Now, what she didn't see was, apparently I was on the left side. I was laying on my left side on the couch. And there was blood coming from the brain bleed. So she didn't see that. Now, there was blood all over the place. She said, in the past, that it looked like a scene from CSI, that kind of thing.
Wow.
So anyway, they're talking, and he heard me gagging. And that was his sign of, like, you got to get him now. Mm-hmm. So, but for her to call him first, right, to have the trust in him as an EMT, as my best friend, and for him to be the one to say, do this right now, I'll meet you there. Like, that's, I'm favorable, you know, God favors me, but there's so much more, right? And just that alone, I'm forever grateful for him, because there's so many backstories of just that moment, but then the moments within the moment, like Dr. Perumba and how he became a doctor, how we became friends as kids and growing up. And but with, you know, the EMT part. So apparently when the EMTs got there, I was combative and I was in my underwear. So originally they thought it was like, you know, alcohol or drugs. I was, you know, was not right because I didn't want to get in the...
I would think postictal after a seizure, or maybe diabetic and
yeah,
hypoglycemic, and you'd a little, you know, I wouldn't go to drugs immediately.
Yeah. I mean, they must have had all kinds of thoughts. So when I was being combative, you know, of like not wanting to get in the stretcher and that kind of stuff, they didn't know what just happened, right? Who would? Because it's like when you get on the scene, it's an EMT, like you're just seeing what you see. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many other medical complications prior to that injury as well. But I'm blessed in the sense, and I say this, that that was the worst day became my best day. Because, you know, that's when I truly knew as time's gone on. My life verse that my pastor gave me as I was recovering, you know, he said, 2 Timothy 1:7, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. He said, it says, "For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but rather a spirit of power, love, and self-control." And as you mentioned, brain injuries, mm-hmm. other things, strokes, things that happen to us, right? They're invisible injuries. Well, the irony in that, or I'll say, you know, the details, because life's in the details is in God. For me, I love the fact that, okay, I have a brain injury, I have an invisible injury, but guess what? I have faith, right? And mm-hmm. faith is live by vision, not by sight. Mm-hmm. So I can fight it, right? But I don't have to fight it. God fights for me. Mm-hmm. So the process of the choice, what he's saying there is, for God did not give us a spirit of timidity. That's a choice. And when you see that that's your choice for yourself, right? And he's given you a spirit of power, love, and self-control. The blessing out of that is, over time, what I learned, and it was very hard, and a lot of wilderness in this journey, mm. right? And isolation, and the transition from isolation to the wilderness. But leader of one, leader of many. If I can't lead one, I can't lead any. So the blessing is that this was the opportunity that God gave me to be a leader of one, because we had been engaged for 6 months. We still ended up getting married, and we had plans, right? Plans for kids, plans for all of these things. So I had a lot of struggles. I was in the wilderness for a while, but the blessing of it was that my kids see me as a leader now, because I was forced, for good reasons, to be a leader of one first. And that's a huge thing for me in the journey, but even now, is being a leader in the household, right? Being a leader as a man. And I'm thankful that the opportunity was to be a leader of one, because I don't know, when I was at the age of 26, when I had it, I don't know if my life was in that trajectory, right? I think I had a lot more setbacks or things that I wasn't even aware of. Talking about invisible injuries, well, let's talk about the invisible things in our lives that we don't see, right? The invisible paths that we're taking. You know, like before my brain injury, in hindsight, I was trying to take God where I wanted to go. And if I were to continue that path and the brain injury didn't exist, if I was taking God where I wanted to go, guess what I'd be doing with my children? Guess what I'd do with my wife, right? So there's more blessings than there were adversities, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you would agree that the world would look at your adversity and think they would be insurmountable.
Yeah. The world looks at you broken, right? And I think that's kind of one of those kind of like, I gotcha, right? And I was listening to a friend's podcast, and he was talking about lumens. He's talking about LED lights. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, with children and babies, they have like 20,000 lumens, 20,000 lights. And what happens over time, right? Those lights, they get turned out. They get burned out, taken away, right? And a lot of times it's the world or the adults that they're with, their families, and their lights are burned out, right? And they don't know what they don't know. And so, yeah, the world, after my brain injury, especially as an adult with a brain injury, the world looked at me broken. And that's that was my biggest struggle, is having a brain injury as an adult. I never felt more broken because I was an adult. And you have this expectation when you're adult, like, I got to figure it out, or I should know what I should know. Mm-hmm. And the broken part of it was that I literally, for the longest time, I didn't remember when I went to college. I didn't remember names. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember my wife's birthday for the longest time. Things that I was struggling with, that, guess what I did? Well, I brushed them under the rug, right? I hid them, right? I tried to find out, not coping mechanisms, but find out a way that I didn't have to like show my identity, right? Because I was embarrassed of not knowing things that I should know, and trying to figure out like, okay, what's a real memory, what's not a real memory. So the world looked at me like I was broken, but it's through God and through my faith that I realized, right, that I'm not broken. As Ian said, that we're not broken, we just need healed. And it just took a long time and the journey for that.
It's amazing, because most people would be sitting there recovering and mending to their wounds, and you are like, I'm going to train for this half marathon. So your tenacity is inspiring, because you didn't just sit there like a lot of people would. You're like, I'm still going to do what I said I'm going to do. And you trained and you've been going ever since.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing too is I've said this like within the last year, something that came to me was I love to tell people, because here's the thing, vulnerability, especially for men, because men have a hard time with being vulnerable. But vulnerability, when two men specifically, when two men are vulnerable, it creates a bond that's unbreakable. And so vulnerability is true strength. And so what happens with vulnerability, and it doesn't have to be men, but in general, right? We look at vulnerability as a weakness. But here's the thing about that is when we're vulnerable, what we're really doing is, okay, we're living in our problems, right? We're hiding in our problems, hiding the darkness. Okay, and here's what I would say. Your problems aren't unique, but your gifts are.
That's good.
And sometimes, and someone asked me this months ago, they said, Ben, you know, I was at church this weekend and, you know, I noticed they talk a lot about the Old Testament. Like, why is he always talking about the Old Testament? Why are the songs in the Old Testament? And I answered the individual then. And as time went on, I still think about this question today. And it's helped me in my faith because I realized, well, here's why the Old Testament is still talked about and is still relevant, because the Old Testament is the New Testament and vice versa. Because you had the prophet Isaiah who prophesied for over 700 years. And you hear things, and I forget the exact scripture, but there was in the Psalms, David said, why have you forsaken me? Okay, those are the exact words that he said. And as Jesus was being crucified, he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Okay, so we know there's power in your words, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to gifts, like, I don't say I get timid in speaking the word, like verse, Timothy, but, you know, you hear people say things like, well, you're amazing, you're a miracle, all these things. And those are great things, right? But we want to focus on, like, I share my story so you can see yourself in my story, right? That's the Bible. That's Jesus Christ, right? Because he died as a man, right? He tasted death for us to have victory. So when I think about, like, the things that I went through, right? Well, let's go. If you want to know your ending, or if you want to know your ending, go back to the beginning. So if you want to know your revelations, go back to the beginning to understand it. So for me in my story, it goes further back than just the brain injury, further back than just those 8 weeks. Like, that's incredible. That's inspirational. That's amazing. But let's go further back. I was born with meningitis encephalitis. At 6 weeks, I was diagnosed with it. Okay. It's speaking of invisible injuries, brain injury, invisible. Guess what? Meningitis encephalitis, invisible. It's incurable. I still have it to this day. Now, did it cause a brain injury? I don't know. And at this point in my life, I don't care, because it's kind of irrelevant.
Right. Just add it to the mix.
Exactly.
God's getting you through this. He'll get you through that too.
Yeah. And so having a medical diagnosis at 6 weeks old, right, growing up with it, I had setbacks prior to January 9th. And so here's what I didn't know what I didn't know. I had always been in fight or flight. And even after my brain injury, and today sometime, I'm still in fight or flight. But when I say that your problems aren't your gifts are, well, my gifts were, right, that I lost sight in my right eye when I was in seventh grade. Then I almost lost sight in my left eye when I was 16. And every time I had all these setbacks, I was forced to fire in how I was handled it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I ran 8 weeks after my brain injury. Not because of that situation, right? Because of the things that happened before, the way I handled it. Now, I will say, as I said before, I was always trying to take God where I wanted to go. So all the adversities that I overcame growing up, I always gave myself the win, as opposed to giving him the praise. So now I'm so thankful, and that's why the worst days become my best day. Because my biggest fear, because we have to understand what our biggest fear is so we can put our fear in the Lord. My biggest fear was, when success comes my way, I'll take his praise away. So all of the adversities, all the things I went through growing up, right? I didn't have my mom, a single mom. I didn't have someone in my family that said, you know, the word of the God, right? I did go to church, but we didn't have conversations. We didn't talk about it. Like, my mom always would say, you're a miracle child. And that put a chip on my shoulder. See, and that's why I tried to take God where I wanted to go. Because I thought my assignment was that I have to fix this, that I have to be the man of the house. And being the man of the house was, I'm the man, having an ego, all of these things. And that's just not the case. And so over time, I was able to let faith grow and let fear go. Because at the end of the day, having a chip on your shoulder, right, I wanted to be perfect. And so eventually, like the tipping of the iceberg was all the adversities I had prior to the brain injury. The brain injury was like, that was the tipping of the iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. That was one I just could not overcome. Mm-hmm. I could overcome all the other ones. So how did I overcome the brain injury? He overcame the brain injury. And that's where the blessing was, you know, is to know that, okay, he's the one in control. And now I could kind of see, you know, how I'm strong. And he's given me so many gifts. He's given me so many gifts to be stubborn. He's given me so many gifts to be headstrong and to want to work out all the time. And the other piece of it too, to be on a tangent, but the other piece of it too is running 8 weeks, a half marathon 8 weeks after. Working out was always my safe space. I wanted to play in the back. I wanted to play in the NBA. I wanted to be an athlete. And here's why. My mom, as I said, was a single mom, alcoholic. Right? I didn't have a safe space. My home wasn't a safe space. Mm-hmm. Where was my safe space? The basketball court. It got to the point as I got older. And again, here is life's in the details of God. Thinking that I wanted to be in the NBA. We lived about 3 or 4 miles from the closest gym. And where I used to live growing up, it was 100 acres of woods. And there was only 3 houses. It was me, my mom and I's house, my grandparents' house, and then a trailer. Okay, there was no one else over the age of me. Mm. Okay, it was all elderly or my mom who was always working. And I didn't have a safe space. So I'd always want to play basketball. And again, the basketball courts, the gymnasium, that basically was my second home that I got made fun of a lot as a kid because that's where I was all the time. And everyone must have thought that was weird or odd. But that was my safe space. That was God taking me to that place, right? And so as I got older and my grandpa couldn't take me, right? Getting older, I wanted to play so bad. I wanted to go to the gym, play with the older guys. Well, I couldn't drive, right? So here's what I would do, especially in the summertime. Just to play basketball, which was what my focus was, how did I get there? I'd have to run 3 or 4 miles to the gym and 3 or 4 miles back. God was in control. I can run now because he had me running then. I just didn't know it. Mm-hmm. That was an aha moment of like, okay, God, you're in this all the time. It wasn't just about basketball. It was bigger than that. And it always is. Mm-hmm. The other one I had was I respected my grandfather so much. If you ever want to know what my grandfather looked like, who's no longer with us, just go to Google and put a Google search in for Clint Eastwood. The two could have been brothers. Maybe they were. I don't know. Maybe I didn't hear, you know, there's a story I didn't hear about, but they looked exactly like, and they act exactly like, I mean, who they were. And so I respected my grandfather so much. He was my father figure. And one time, and my mom also really did a good job of emphasizing respect your elders. So I respected my grandfather. Anyway, so one time, I was maybe around a teenager, we kind of started getting a little bit of an argument. And it got to the point where I knew I, A, couldn't win this argument, and B, there was no point in just, you know, keep it going. And I was just going to have to let it go. So I got so frustrated that instead of being defensive or instead of yelling at him or instead of whatever, I had a moment, and it almost like the injury, the brain injury of where that Forrest Gump moment, right? I just started running. Got so mad, but instead of taking that anger on an elderly, right, or my father figure, I turned around and just started running. Next thing I know, I ran about 8 miles at least, without even stopping, without even hesitating. Now, this is the point where it's like if people remember dial-up phones, right? Mm-hmm. Rotary phones or even. And there's no cell phones or no nothing, right? And so I ran away from the situation, just like Moses did, right? Mm. When he killed two men, he ran away. God knew he was going to run away. That's why God met him with the burning bush. So I ran away. And next thing you know, I'm 8 miles out. And I don't know what clip I was running, but it was pretty fast. And then the ironic part was, out of all because of this argument that I had with him, no phones, all that kind of stuff. When I finally stopped, I knew where I was, but yet I didn't because I'm like, crap, how am I going to get home? So the funny part was I had to go into some random business and say, hey, can I use your phone? And again, I respected my grandfather, especially because he was disciplinary, you know. I thought, oh man, I'm done. You know, like now he's going to come pick me up. Like, come on, I just ruined his day. We had an argument. He did it with grace, with love, right? And so that was my other aha moment. Of like my running moment. Like I can run now, I'm a good runner because God always had me run. And the last part of it I'll say is I always get to where I'm going by walking away from where I've been.
Hmm.
And the Israelites, right, when they were in the desert, they had a moment of, we want to go back. But where were they going back? To slavery. Where were they going back? Right? Did you just bring us...
Comfortability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where did you... Yeah. What did you do? You brought us here just to die? Right? They didn't understand. And we get to read that and understand what was ahead of them. Right?
As if the hardship in the wilderness was worse than the hardship of being a slave.
Right. And the hardship of the wilderness was, hey, the hardship now leads to the promised land.
Right.
We get to see that. They didn't. Right? So now I'm thinking about that in the scripture all the time in my life. Because I held on to playing basketball and the dream of playing basketball after my brain injury. I was coaching at the time. So my plate was so full. I was a brain recovery, right? I was a young adult. I was married. And then I was still trying to play basketball. And I was still holding on to that tightly, which is why I say let faith grow, let fear go. Because sometimes what happens is we have faith, right, in a dream, hardship, right? We're in hardship and we want to go back to comfortability rather than being hardship, right, which is our faith. And we have a dream, we have a goal. All of these external factors, right, are holding us back from letting faith grow. So what happens is, and this was me, I was still trying to play basketball. So I was recovering from a brain injury. I was married. We want to have kids. I was starting to get into running. I was coaching basketball. I was wanting to play basketball on a higher level, right? And if you say yes to everything, you say no to everything, right? You can't serve everyone. If you serve everyone, you serve no one.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't serving God. I had all of these things going on. And so I was in a basketball game playing on a weekend on a Saturday. And my walking away moment, where I truly walked away from basketball, was I was in this pickup game with an older man, and during the game, I had taken a shot. I didn't take the shot. Another individual on the team took a shot, and it was an ill-advised shot. Just wasn't a good shot, fundamentally, all of these different things. Anyway, he takes his shot, he misses it, and I'm busting my butt to get this rebound. And I couldn't get the rebound because of my balance system, you know, all of these things that I should have got it, but I didn't. And when I didn't, we're going back down the court, and this another adult male yells, and he says, grab the effing rebound. And I was shattered. And I was mad because it was his fault for the ill-advised shot. And here I am trying to cover him up, right? Trying to get this ball, trying to hustle. And he doesn't know what he doesn't know, right? He doesn't know I had a brain injury. He doesn't know I'm broken, all these things that I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. And that was my, not breaking moment, but in a way, my refining moment. So I go in the gym, and it's not like I was all alone. I go in the gym, I look in the mirror, and I started crying. I was like, what am I doing? I can't play this game anymore. I just can't do it. So that was my moment of, I always get to where I'm going by walking away from where I've been.
Mm.
And that's when I let running through adversity. And I committed to not running. Like I thought I was a runner. But again, to go back to, if you want to know your ending, go to the beginning. The beginning, I said, I did say I am a runner, but I am a child of God first. Who likes to run? And I'm blessed to run. And that Saturday morning, I walked away from that. And I've been running ever since. And I've been improving ever since. As you get older, right, you get frustrated when you don't improve. I started, my first marathon was 5 hours and 49 minutes. I'm now realistically shooting for 2 hours and 49 minutes or less.
Wow.
But it's not because of the running, right? It's because who's leading me.
Incredible.
That reminded me, your gifts. When you were running when you were younger and didn't have a purpose with it yet, it reminded me of back in the day, I was voted most talkative in my high school class. And now God's using that gift in a podcast to bring him glory and make him a star, something they'll always remember. So it's just, and then we all have the same problems. It reminded me of Shayla Huber's episode, 10 Things I Hate About My Husband.
Nice.
How God healed my heart and restored my marriage and set me free. She has this book and she shares the problems that she dealt with in her marriage. And there's so many women that can be like, oh my gosh, that's my marriage too. And it turns out I'm the problem. But, you know, so go listen to that episode.
Don't take it on yourself.
Generally, I am the problem. But when you work on yourself.
Sure, you're not alone.
But, yeah, we all have a lot of the similar problems. So we're all in this together. And then if we actually sat down with one another, we could empathize with one another. Like, yeah, because every couple has the spender and the saver, the person who leaves the floor drobe, and they don't get it in the hamper because you're not ready to part with that piece of clothing yet. And it's just every marriage has the same struggles, I feel.
It, to me, it's so unique to see like you and my wife, where you have been called at a younger age to do something that you didn't know you were called to do it. It was just something you did.
And liked.
And I've never experienced that. And I see it in you. I see it in my wife. I've seen it in other people. It's not everybody. It's not everybody's gift. Not everybody's calling. Not everything that God uses to call people. You know, I feel more like God's junk drawer. You know, I'm not the most useful thing, but when you really, really, really need something, it's in there.
Yeah, you're the Swiss Army knife in the junk drawer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I honestly believe I'm the whole junk drawer. Like, whatever you can stuff in one is what God has equipped me to be in those moments. And it's, you know, it's not great for fixing a car, but it's enough to get the car down the hill.
You know, it's speaking about, you know, gifts. Like you said, being talkative, you know, like when we think about like the devil, right? Sometimes you give the devil too much credit, you know, like it's almost like, I don't want to say it was in Job, right? Where God and the devil, God said, here's what you can do. So the devil could test Job. But God's confidence was like, it doesn't matter what test you give him. So the devil's only allowed to what? Lie, steal, right? And distract. So one of the things I've always said, I started saying this in the beginning of January this year, was faith advances and fear infiltrates. The devil wants to infiltrate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why does he want to infiltrate? Because he doesn't want faith advancing. That's the inevitable. Like, mm-hmm. faith is going to advance. So when you were saying that, you know, I went through things that God, you know, was there providing for me, I kind of think God has such a sense of humor. Because he's essentially like, look, I'm going to stand at the side. I'm going to stand in the back, which he was, right? He's in front of you, behind you, left to you, right to you, all of those things. But in those moments, in those seasons where you don't see him, and it's the devil's tempting you, the devil's distracting you, like basketball is an idol, that was my distraction, but God was using that against the devil, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's hilarious. And that gives me even more power.
Mm-hmm.
He just wove all those details together. Like, you want to go to basketball, but you have to run to get there.
Right.
He's like, just planted that little, you took that step.
And you know, and I'm an analytical person. And that's why, you know, with basketball, I love the game of basketball, right? I always had to pay attention to the game of basketball, especially losing sight in my right eye when I did. The first thing I wanted to do. And here's the thing though, I was young, right? So I had a brain injury when I was older. The biggest test of my life was when I was older, right? And I had all these other little tests. I'm not saying they weren't big, but they weren't as big as a brain injury. But having these little tests when I'm younger, well, what do we have when kids are childlike faith? Kids are resilient. Kids bounce back. So again, that's another advantage for me. It's not a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all these things against me that I'm, you know, stacked up. And so the depth perception, right? Which when it comes to depth perception visually, which I had an issue with, people are like, how'd you overcome that? Well, I know it was God. But when you think about depth perception, right? Someone said, well, how do you balance things out? A question was asked to a friend of mine who's a wife, a mother, and I don't know if she's a podcaster, but she does all these like ultra events, like ultra marathons, all these different things, and she's an entrepreneur. How do you balance it all? She said, there's no such thing as balance. There's only awareness. I like to think of it as spatial awareness, right? Depth perception. And so to wrap it up, with perception and struggling and trying to become the best basketball player I could be, I'd work extra harder. And that's my advantage. Because after, so I can't see out of my right eye. After the brain injury, I can't hear to my left ear to this day, and it still rings every day. But my balance system was affected on my left side to my advantage, because now I can't see my right eye, and I can't see my left, or I can't, my left side is shattered or broken. And as you would maybe kind of understand this a little bit with EMT in the body, basically it's kind of balancing each other out.
Oh, absolutely.
It's much better to be able to see
like,
out of my...
Like putting the weight on your tire after you get them rotated so they're balanced.
Yeah. So...
It's perfect.
When I started running, the funny thing is, I think it's funny, when I was training for this half marathon, again, I was at risk to fall for 6 months because my balance system was shattered. I, not knowing this now, I had so much faith in God and just going out and running, right? And as I was running, I'm running along like the neighborhood roads. And so it's like, I'm at risk to fall. I was so extra careful, like mentally, when I was running, that I didn't fall, go to the left just enough that I would get hit by a car, right? Or trip or fall. So I was putting so much faith in God, right, to lead me. And that was another thing I'm thankful for. And again, those details of when I was a kid, those things I had to focus on as extra, was my depth perception to become the best basketball player I could be. Now, that's God's using me, right? Your adversities are others' blessings. Mm-hmm. Like my adversities are just to bless others. Just like you said, other people have problems, right? And they're just maybe at different times in those problems, but they're all very, very similar. Mm-hmm. And so when we hear other people's problems, that's part of the darkness to lightness. We see the lightness and we're curious. We start to come out a little bit more, right? And then you're like, oh my gosh, me too. And when you have that me too moment, that's fellowship. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden fellowship turns into community. It turns into, wow, I'm no longer in the darkness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you're no longer alone.
Right. And you know, so now it's like isolation, it's over, right? The hibernation. And the last thing I'll say this is too, is the wilderness. I grew up fearing the wilderness, maybe, or I don't want to say my faith, but I just had such a different outlook on the wilderness. Now, when I look at the wilderness, I think that's where we're found. Because Matthew chapter 4, he was led into the wilderness. Spirit led in the wilderness, right? He was tempted for 40 days and 40 nights. And then after that is when his ministry was. So now when I look at the wilderness, I think of like, that's my time of preparation. So I want to share my wilderness to help others in their wilderness.
How interesting you phrased it, that your time in the wilderness was a time of preparation. It seems a lot like John the Baptist, whose time in the wilderness was a time of preparation.
Yeah.
Just throw that one out there for you. I don't know if you realized that when you said it.
Yeah. And all of the others that were led into the wilderness prior to that as well. I want to say it was Elijah was led into the wilderness. And there was even a point where Elijah, an angel, gave him bread on a stone. And then what does Jesus say to the tempter? He uses the words of God. Not just the words of God, but we get to see where those words were used with man. Because Jesus was man who died, right, for us. But the trenches, your leadership is born in trenches. Jesus was in the trenches. His trials have blazed trails for us. And that's, again, why our problems aren't unique. We have to share them because those will blaze trails for others.
That and everything that you bring in the lightness will flee, right? Mm. Darkness cannot exist where there is light.
Yes.
Right? There's no such thing as darkness. There's no way for us to gauge darkness. All we can gauge is the absence of light. Mm. And so, I mean, it's the same as with cold. We can't measure cold. We can only measure the absence of heat.
Yes.
And I love to throw this one out there. When they say that God created evil, I say he didn't.
Right.
All evil is the absence of good.
Yeah.
And so when you take God completely out of something, you are left with evil, period. Because that is what space without God is.
And there's only going to be one place where there's not light. You know, right now, all we see is, we think it might be dark, but there's always light there. Mm-hmm. There's only one place that there's not light.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have to take a step back from where we are just to see where God is in it, because he's too close.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Right when you think, I can't see him, I can't feel you, I feel smothered, just because he's the one smothering you.
Yes.
Right? It's not your problem. It's him. He's so close. He's so abundantly upon top of you that you are completely encompassed by the will of God, that sometimes you have to take a step back to see that, yes, in fact, he is cradling you in those moments.
Yes.
Mm. The Holy Spirit reminded me of this post I saw recently, and that was going around, that faith and fear are both believing in something you can't see. So choose wisely.
And, oh, that's so good. Also, and this is why faith, they're so connected, right? So we have to have so much discernment. The other part of that too, to piggyback off of that, because I love that. Faith and fear both have a future that is unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So put your hope in the future just means that time hasn't caught up yet.
Yeah.
If you put your hope in the future, now you're just waiting with aggressive patience. Mm-hmm. So I love that.
It doesn't make much sense to put your hope in the fear.
Right.
No. No, that won't get you.
We do it all the time, though, as people.
Yeah.
We do it all the time.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have anything else on your heart that you wanted to share? That was good.
No, just, you know, the very last thing I'll say is progress over perfection. We talk about fear a lot right now and in general, or we think about it a lot, right? So let's not be our own worst enemies. The longest relationship you're going to have in your life is with yourself. Mm-hmm. That's why we want to be a leader of one. So in a way, kind of maybe an ending prayer would be this: progress over perfection. Don't beat yourself up. That's if we beat ourselves up, right? Fear infiltrates, right? If we beat ourselves up, we're doing his work. So number one, progress over perfection. And number two, when I say LFG, which is let faith grow, let fear go, I really want listeners to understand and take this home. That I, and this is just to let you release and to let you be present. There's power in your presence. Peace is an entryway, not an escape. So I would rather live a life of many failures than one regret. Hmm. And that's let faith grow. Because if we get to that old age where we're asked questions, the majority of time, it's a regret. And if we hold on and hold on and hold on and don't let go, don't let the seed plant, that seed becomes regret. We squeeze the life out of it, out of ourselves. And like you said, with lightness, we're going to squeeze it out of everyone else around us as well. Mm-hmm. So don't fear failure. Failure's fine. Life of failure rather than one regret, which might be coming to Jesus.
They teach you at Mary Kay, fail fast, fail a lot, because the more no's you get, the more yeses you'll encounter, because you built that muscle of, you know, doing your thing. Mm-hmm. So
thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, what a unique story. Just another way that God has overcome. A TBI, again, is in every way traumatic, just like the T in it stands for. And people don't normally get back to, they can,
yeah,
but they don't normally get to have a life or something that somebody like that your previous life would say would be a life worth living. And thank God that he is able and willing to do things in our lives, even through adversity. Mm-hmm. And I am so glad that you're learning the lesson that he's trying to teach you since birth, where he's just completely like harming your mind and things for a purpose that is so beyond our sight. And I say jokingly, I hope you've learned your lesson. Right?
Yeah.
Because like, what else do you want to endure?
Right. Yeah.
And Lord, I know that's not it. Right. Yeah. I don't want to be like Job's friends and saying something that's not true. Right. Just wanted to be funny. It's really unfathomable to think of your parents when they looked at you as a baby. And then, you know, and then they see you healed from this meningitis, right? Yeah. This is something that does claim lives. And then they think, hey, you're a miracle. They put this on you.
Right.
Right. And now you have to grow into this.
Yeah.
This isn't something God gave you. This is something that somebody else gave you that you're trying to walk into and live into and try to live out. And that's a lot of a burden for somebody to try to live up to being a miracle.
Right.
Right. And my parents never called me one. So I had a low bar and it made things a lot easier for me. Right. Now, once did they call me a miracle. And so I never thought that. I never had something, but I totally am, right?
And it's exactly. Dad had a vasectomy, and then he was born.
Wow.
Yeah,
so that's a miracle right there.
Right, and so, and you know, I had no idea, you know, as a baby, and I wasn't raised as a child.
God's basically saying, I don't need you, like, with that miracle, right?
He's right.
Like, no, this is what I will do. Like, that's a miracle, though, right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. He was born
addicted to nothing, even though his mom was on a bunch of drugs when she was pregnant with him. So, like, he was totally a miracle baby.
Well, right.
That's why we laughed.
Well, no, that's, I'm so glad you said that, though, because that it's all in the story, right? The likes and the details and the details in God. Because here's the thing. I think it was today's verse of the day was Isaiah 1:11, I think is what it was. Okay, talking about the root. Okay, mm-hmm. And then the root become the fruit. But you look into it, it's the bad fruit becoming the good root, okay, which is Jesus. The perfect man, right? His genealogy was so imperfect.
Oh, yeah.
That's the story right there. Like, you, we're, all three of us are living the story in one way or the other. And when I say one way or the other, because we're all the hands and feet of Jesus, we're all one part, we're all one of the body. So that's an amazing piece that you shared that. Like, you are a miracle. And when you said real quickly about my mom or just parents in general.
My mom.
But your mom and then, like, my mom when I was born and my miracle child, right? I was just thinking about this, too. And again, it all comes down to, like, I didn't know what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So with myself, and I'm accountable for myself and how I feel and what I've been through, all this stuff, right? And now that I'm a father of two girls and things. When you said about coming out and your mom, or for me, my mom saying that I'm a miracle baby, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
It just, for some reason in my mind, it came to projected versus protected, right? Because he's protected me.
Mm-hmm.
My mom projected on me. And she didn't know what she didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. Again, everything's so fine-lined. She didn't know that she was setting me up. It wasn't her on purpose.
Right, no. If she knew that she would harm you,
right,
that she never would have done it.
Right,
no mother loving her children would ever do such a thing.
And then I can almost kind of forgive, in a way, a lot of some of those things, right? Because my mom was an alcoholic. Now, and I, real quick, very, very ironic. I don't know if I mentioned this. She had a brain injury. In 2016.
You did not mention that.
3 years after I had mine. Hers, home alone as well. Hers, stairs. Hers, alcohol induced. The day that I got her out of the hospital, and because when she was in the hospital, I fought for her. I was an advocate. I thought, again, I kind of reverted back to, I can fix this. Because we get so caught up in being a blessing versus being the blessing. We put too much pressure on ourselves. So I'm the blessing. Oh, I survived the brain injury. Oh, I can fix this. Oh, I can help her. Let's get her home. I fought for her to get home. Take her home the very day that she came home. And you would know this for sure. After a brain injury or so many other medical things, what do you not do? Drink. Don't mix it.
Yeah, nope. Yeah.
Get her home the very first day after I fought days and days and days for her to come home. Go to take her home. We have all these things that are going to be set up, right? I tricked myself thinking life is going to be this. We go to a restaurant. First meal as she gets out of the hospital. What she do? Orders alcohol. Didn't think it was a problem. And then I kind of set myself up, right? But
idol.
Exactly. And it still is her idol. And I still struggle with that now.
It's more than that, though, with a dependency on a substance, right? It stops becoming an idol as more as it becomes... you can't live without it. And instead of coming to it because you're sad or happy or trying to make an excuse why you want it, you don't make an excuse at that point once you're completely dependent upon it. You just don't care to make an excuse anymore.
Right.
And that's actually not a bad place to be because you can find honesty in that.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to start with her, is knowing that she's at that place of honesty, that she doesn't care where she's at. And that's honestly, it doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
But it's better than her denying.
And then it becomes like me just accepting that's where she's at, right? And not trying to fix.
It's not your job to fix.
Right.
Your job is to tell her about the glory of Jesus.
Right.
And it's his glorious burden to fix her.
Yeah.
He said he will fix her. He said he will wipe away every tear. He didn't say that you're going to wipe away every tear.
Right.
He didn't call me to wipe away any tears. In fact, I'm pretty sure he's going to be wiping some tears away because of things I've said to people in my past. So I know he's not going to ask me to do that if I'm the cause of some of those tears. And so that's not your job. That's not your place. Your place is to pray for her. Your place is to be there for her. But your place is not to fix her. That's his job.
No.
And he's really good at his job.
There's so much peace in that, knowing that, like, all you have to do, he's still doing more work than us.
You could say he's pulling the lion's share.
Yeah, because all we have to do is introduce. So why are we making it harder than we have to? Well, the devil's why we're making it harder than we have to, right? Guilt, shame, all of these things. So, yeah, just that's amazing. Thanks for sharing that. I love that. You are all miracles. I love it.
Well, I hope this has blessed others listening to it, and I hope that it encourages you and it inspires you to share it with a friend or family member. And if this podcast in its entirety has been a blessing to you, we ask that you would help support the mission. We have some links in the About section if you want to give. And then if you can rate this in Spotify or Apple Podcasts, that would be wonderful, because then it'll tell the algorithm that people are liking it, and then it'll share it with more people, and then more people can be encouraged. And don't forget to like and follow. We're on all the social medias.
And pray. I love praying. Praying is my favorite part of the whole thing. Is pray for us. Pray for my wife. Pray for me individually as a team, for the podcast. Pray for our guests. Mm-hmm. Pray for the people they put on their heart when you ever heard a podcast from them. Pray for those people as well. Pray for someone that you didn't even think you needed to pray for, but the Lord called them to your mind. Just do that. Put it on there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Maven.
That's my favorite part, is the prayer.
Amen.
And with that, we'll talk to you next time.